Okay, guys, I've got an awesome recommendation for you. I've been looking for a smart, wearable piece of tech that I can use for fitness and health tracking and all that everyday use, but also something that's really great when I'm outdoors, having fun, going on adventures. And I have found it. It's called Amazfit. You might not have heard of them. I actually hadn't, but 42 million users have, so it's really well established. They make a ton of different smartwatches and bands and other stuff. But the watch I've been testing out is part of their adventure series, and it's called the Amazfit T-Rex 3. And I'm going to get into the tech stuff in a minute, but I just want to say it looks so cool. Even my missus has said to me, "That's a cool looking watch," and she knows what she's talking about, and I don't get those kind of compliments every day. But onto the nitty gritty stuff, when it comes to outdoor sports and adventure, it's got it all. It can track hiking, skiing, biking, running. It's got free diving. That's how much it covers, 170 sport modes and all. It's got all the usual health stuff, but check this out. The battery life is ridiculous. I've been wearing it nonstop for 10 days and haven't had to recharge it once. So it's perfect for adventure stuff, for traveling. I absolutely love it. Highly recommend it. So if you want to find out more, go to amazfit.com/armchair. And that's one word, A-M-A-Z-F-I-T. And when you get there, you're going to get 15% off your order. That's massive. So that website again is amazfit.com/armchair. The Amazfit T-Rex 3 is more than just a smartwatch. It's your personal guide to exploration, discovery, and the thrill of the unknown.
Ryan Reynolds here for, I guess, my 100th Mint commercial. No. I mean, honestly, when I started this, I thought I only have to do like 4 of these. I mean, it's unlimited premium wireless for $15 a month. How are there still people paying 2 or 3 times that much? I'm sorry, I shouldn't be victim blaming here. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/save. Whenever you're ready.
$45 upfront payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes. See details.
Hey guys, welcome to Armchair Explorer and the first of our connection episodes. And it's going to be a really fun one. The idea with this format is to put out longer form conversations with really cool, interesting people about things that might not necessarily work for our signature documentary formats, things like art and culture, philosophy even, all sorts of stuff. There's always going to be an exploration bent to it, but I wanted to do something that allowed us to go somewhere different than those big expeditions and immersive trips that we do and look for the ideas and the people and the details that might otherwise get missed. One of the great joys of exploring the world and life in general, in fact, is the people you meet along that journey, especially the ones that surprise you and inspire you and maybe even have a really deep and profound impact on you too, though you might have only spent a day with them or a week or even just a coffee or a fleeting moment. So that's the idea here, to introduce you to some of those kind of people and hopefully forge a connection that will do something of that magic of meeting people on the road. And today we're speaking with Jenny Hunter from a company called The Adventurous. She helped set up this company actually with a guy called Tom Morgan about 20 years ago. Tom, and I quote this from their website, says he set up The Adventurous from his cupboard in his pants. And the idea was to reinstate a proper sense of adventure into the lives of the people that traveled with them, a sense of journeying into the unknown, of risk, a spirit of open-mindedness and not knowing what's around the corner. They're kind of the anti-tour operator. They set the stage for adventure, proper, crazy, mad adventure, extreme, sort of, but in a really playful Monty Python sort of way, I'd probably describe it. They do not take themselves too seriously, which I love. And in this day and age, with the technology we have in our pocket, there's a tendency to plan things out to the nth degree, isn't there? So aside from the fun, aside from the Monty Python elements, I think the spirit of The Adventurists as a counterpoint to that is a really important one and worth listening to. I think it's pretty inspiring, actually. So we're going to go into that, but we're going to do it through the lens of their first trip, the first trip that started it all. It's called the Mongol Rally, and it is nuts. So it's a really fun interview. We crack each other up throughout it, but it's also kind of deep in places too. Just the kind of thing I love, and I hope you do too. So enough of me, let's get on with the show. Hey guys, welcome back to Armchair Explorer. Today we are in conversation with Jenny Hunter, who is one of the founders of The Adventurous, which is a company that I absolutely love. And I'm so excited to talk with Jenny today about the first ever adventure that you guys did. Yeah. But to set the scene a little bit, I want to read something from your website. You guys write amazing copy that like genuinely cracks me up when I read it, but also gets me really excited for like adventure and taking off. So I'm just going to read this out. Adventure is a word that has had its meaning stamped into the mud of indifference. It has been boil washed by marketing shits into meaning holidays without a beach. But adventure isn't a place or an activity. Adventure is not knowing what will happen to you tomorrow or in the next 10 minutes. Adventure is setting forth in a spirit of ignorance. It's getting lost. It's getting stuck. It's getting in trouble. It is the stage upon which chaos can be wrought. I love that. I love that so much. So let's start at the beginning then. Who are the adventurers? Who are you guys?
So actually, I think that's a difficult question to answer. There's obviously like me and Tom and Dan and the guys that were an amazing team of people that work for us now. But there's also this huge community as well right now, right around the world, who are incredible and who I hope like hold up the banner of adventurism. But it started with the Mongol Rally. And that happened before the adventurers happened. So at the time,
right, okay,
the Mongol Rally was the Mongol Rally. Like, we didn't think we had a bigger thing. We had 6 cars and an idea to get to Mongolia, and that was it. And Tom and Jules had tried before and failed. So 2001 was actually the unofficial first time they'd taken their little Fiat 126 and tried to get to Mongolia and failed totally. They got to Iran, couldn't go any further. And this was the first like official reattempt to do it.
So it wasn't like the kind of launch of a business at that time. It was just a couple of mad friends deciding to drive a shit car to Mongolia.
Exactly that. It was like, we are determined to take these tiny cars to the furthest place that we think we can get on the map.
I love that so much. Like, how on earth do you come up with something like that?
That's Tom. Tom's brain is incredible. And he comes up with all sorts of amazing ideas and adventures and plans. And then him and Jules actually went together and did it again. It was their second attempt. And I went with a mate of mine called John, who we'd lived in Russia with prior to the rally. And we managed, goodness, I don't even know how we managed. I can't even remember how we managed to like get 4 other teams involved. I think we might have had a little website. I do remember running around local pubs where Tom lived and putting up our little A4 posters that we'd printed out. And a little box for our charity fundraising, which was for Sendacow at the time. Yeah, and somehow we got 4 other teams.
That's amazing.
So, and that was so exciting. It was so exciting at the time.
How drunk have you got to be in a pub to see like an A4 poster of driver costs to Mongolia and do it?
I think it said traveling for sissies. And that was what we did. That was our entire campaign.
I love
in
it.
Local pubs. And we got 6 teams. And that's sort of the birth of it, really. And it wasn't the adventurous. It wasn't anything bigger. It was, we're going to make it to Mongolia. And I remember people saying, there's no way. Like, these little cars are not, that's not the point of these little cars. They won't make it all that way. And I remember thinking, well, actually, it was like totally focused on the fact that we were going to try anyway. And the point was having a, I don't know, my Fiesta, like I had a Ford Fiesta, I think it was 1 liter or 999, something like that.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because I love the sort of requirement to drive in a bad car just to make it harder to get to Mongolia, as if it wasn't hard enough.
Yeah.
But, you know, going back to that thing I read and that sort of spirit of what adventure means, like, what is that part of the company? Like, what is that ethos and where does it come from?
I think it comes from those early days. And Mongolia was a relatively short bit of the journey for us. We went in at the north in Altanpulag. And so the distance from the border with Russia to Ulaanbaatar was short. We did it within a day. And I remember the feeling of, it was momentous for me. I was like, we've done it. We've driven for weeks across the planet, our planet. And now we're in Mongolia, which is where we set out from Shoreditch in the same little car. 4 of us got through and we're doing this thing. just, I remember everything, the light, the roads. I was obviously like quite, you know, vigilant at that point because I was so excited. But it also came with a sense of anticlimax. And I was reflecting on that today and thinking, why was I feeling a bit like, oh, and that's nothing to do with Mongolia. Mongolia's pimp. It's amazing. I love it. But it was about the end of the journey and the end of the adventure, realizing that's I'm not going to drive this little car through the most ridiculous places and get stuck in potholes and break down and have to like make a head gasket out of an ice cream box anymore. We're done. We've come to the end of this adventure. And that has sort of come through in all of the adventures we do. It isn't about making it to the end. And it never has been. We didn't set out from Shoreditch going, we will definitely make it to Mongolia. We had literally no idea whether we would make it to Mongolia. Of course, if we had a big 4x4, whatever, you would. And people drive, you know, quickly to Mongolia all the time, or did through Russia. So that wasn't particularly new. But taking a car that purposefully probably couldn't make it, that was. And the fact that we got them there via all the adventures that we had on the way, which I think has become, you know, the core of what then became the Adventurists. Like, we don't know whether the 70 people that line up, you know, for the monkey run in Morocco, the start line to cross the Sahara on a tiny bike, are going to make it or not. We don't know. We think they will, because we've got faith that they're going to find a way. And that was always the thing. You're going to find a way out of getting stuck and lost, but hopefully you're going to get a bit stuck and a bit lost. And that's what the adventure is. And I think it comes from us in those early days going, right, we're going to go from Shoreditch to our ferry and see how that goes. And then we're going to get across the channel. And then we get to France, we're going to work out where we're going next. And it was like that. So when I got to the end, I was like, oh, I don't know. That now what I have to do is get home, but it's not going to be in my car.
I imagine you got quite attached to your car.
Got so attached to my car. I love it when I see pictures. I'm like, oh, it's my little Starsky and Hutch Fiesta.
Oh, it's so great.
It's just a red secondhand Fiesta. I think John and I spent something like 226 quid on it. Because at the time you could get that, couldn't you? And it was just a little four-seater Fiesta. And we just painted a big Starsky and Hutch, like white tick on the side for our racing colours.
Did you like jump through the window? Isn't that those guys that do that? They don't even use the doors. I think that's an accident. That's a little too risky. Yeah. Okay, guys, I've got an awesome recommendation for you. I've been looking for a smart, wearable piece of tech that I can use for fitness and health tracking and all that everyday use, but also something that's really great when I'm outdoors, having fun, going on adventures. And I have found it. It's called Amazfit. You might not have heard of them. I actually hadn't, but 42 million users have. So it's really well established. They make a ton of different smartwatches and bands and other stuff. But the watch I've been testing out is part of their adventure series, and it's called the Amazfit T-Rex 3. And I'm going to get into the tech stuff in a minute, but I just want to say it looks so cool. Even my missus has said to me, that's a cool looking watch, and she knows what she's talking about. And I don't get those kind of compliments every day. But onto the nitty gritty stuff. When it comes to outdoor sports and adventure, it's got it all. It can track hiking, skiing, biking, running. It's got free diving. That's how much it covers. 170 sport modes and all. It's got all the usual health stuff. But check this out. The battery life is ridiculous. I've been wearing it nonstop for 10 days and haven't had to recharge it once. So it's perfect for adventure stuff, for traveling. I absolutely love it. Highly recommend it. So if you want to find out more, go to amazfit.com/armchair. And that's one word, A-M-A-Z-F-I-T. And when you get there, you're going to get 15% off your order. That's massive. So that website again is amazfit.com/armchair. The Amazfit T-Rex 3 is more than just a smartwatch. It's your personal guide to exploration, discovery, and the thrill of the unknown. Hey guys, I want to talk to you about slow fashion. Now, you probably know about slow travel, which is about savoring a place and choosing trips that benefit local communities. Slow fashion, I actually hadn't heard of before until I started chatting with the guys from Doer, who are very generously sponsoring this episode. Thank you guys, you're awesome. And the reason why I'm so excited to be working with them is because Doer make clothes that fit both sides of my lifestyle. At work, I want to wear something that my missus says, dang, you look good in. At play, I want to wear something that's designed for active outdoor fun, that's stretchy and built for that kind of thing. And they do that. Doer is built for doing, and they fix that problem by doing both sides of my life. But they also, and this is where slow fashion comes in, they solve another issue for me, which is sustainability. Doer uses 85% plant-based fibers, which is amazing for the environment. Fast fashion counts for something like 20% of all microplastics in the ocean. So choosing slow fashion, choosing a company like Doer, really does make a difference. So they have got you covered all year round, and they've also got you covered for winter. I know you guys are thinking about that. That's coming up. They got lots of special brands, fireside denim, all-weather denim, lots of stuff designed for outdoor fun in this season. I absolutely love my Doers, and I really do think you will too. So check out Doers flagship stores in LA or Denver, or go online at shopdoer, that's doer.com/explore. Right now, guys, you're going to get 20% off your first order. That's massive. That is a great deal. So go to shopdoer.com/explore to get that deal, to go and check it out. You're going to love it. So don't wait to get that 20% off. Go now to shopdoer.com/explore.
And we had a box of spares in the bag, but I've no idea to this day whether they were the right ones. I've no idea. I don't know much about mechanics at all, so I think I'm a pretty good driver. But I don't think if the car had broken down seriously that I'd have been able to do anything, and neither would John. And we just got, I managed to get a local garage to basically give me a box of spares for a Ford Fiesta. And I bunged it in the boot. That's me done. I think the pillows took up more room than my spares.
I love it. That was the sum total of your planning. Chuck a couple of spares in the back. No mechanical knowledge. That's the spirit of it. Yeah.
But I bloody loved that car, Aaron. I loved it. And it got us there. It got us there. It was 10,000 miles or something that we drove of the planet in a little 1 liter Fiesta.
That's amazing. What did it feel like? So where are you at the start? Could you describe that? Where are you? I'm imagining the cars are lined up or something like that. What's it feel like to be at the start or something like that?
Yeah, I think lined up is probably sounds a bit more functional than I think it was at the time. They get lined up now. But at the time, we basically managed to persuade a bar in Shoreditch called the T-Bar, who had a kind of big industrial warehouse-esque space, to let us drive the cars in there, and they were sort of parked around in the bar, and then we had just a little send-off. And I don't know how many people came. I don't think it was that many. I was looking at photographs of it the other day, but we were so proud because the Mongolian ambassador came to see us off. We've got photos of us with him, and that was so exciting. And it was extremely low-key physically, but internally such a momentous moment. For the rally, that was the start. And obviously in context now, where it became this thing for hundreds of people to have done and hopefully enjoyed and adventured through their world.
I have this picture of you guys all there and it being like, come on, let's go. And then coming out of the bar and just immediately getting stuck in traffic or something.
It's exactly like that. It's exactly like that. So you go out and then you're like, I've got to catch my ferry now. That's it, the pedestrian nature of adventure, isn't it? Because actually what you're doing is trying to get yourself to Dover.
That's brilliant. And I should ask you as well, because you guys have this concept of the en route. A lot of people would imagine that you've mapped out exactly where you're going to go, but you hadn't. What is the en route?
We didn't. We don't. Well, because we knew we were trying to get to Mongolia, and Ulaanbaatar is their capital, so we were trying to get there. But we didn't have a plan apart from that. So obviously we knew we had to book a ferry and we had to get to the European mainland. And then after that, we sort of took it as it came. I mean, we had to have certain visas. We knew we'd go through Russia. And I really liked that. I do that now. I travel, even with the kids. You know where you might want to get to, but you don't have to know every detail. You don't. Because actually some of the beauty of an adventure, or even arguably life, is not knowing every single thing. And being okay with not knowing every single thing.
Absolutely. That's inspiring. I'm going to do more of that with my kids, actually. I just usually do that by accident, but I'm going to plan not to plan for the next one. Yeah, I think that's great. Yeah.
And see what happens and introduce them to the idea of spontaneity and adventure. And I personally like benefit from that hugely. I love it.
So you get on the ferry at night to Dover and then you arrive in France. Like what that first part through Europe, like what was the route you ended up taking? What were some of the bits that you remember from that?
I think we went quite north. So I remember going through Brussels and Germany, Poland, and it was a bit of a blur. Like we did Europe quickly. I think we were quite keen to get as far east as we could. And I think it's when we hit Ukraine that we kind of slowed down. And I remember going to this woman's house in Lviv and her inviting us all in to have tea. And she showed us all these amazing foods that she was pickling, like beetroots and things. And we ate with her and had tea with her. And I think that was the first point in Europe where we just sat and talked to someone. We didn't do the whole of Ukraine. We went back up north and crossed into Russia a bit further up in Latvia. And then you have the vastness of Russia. And again, it's that sense of scale. That's something else that you get, I think, that you wouldn't get from hopping in a plane or doing it another way, or even necessarily being on a coach where you're not the person confronting the distance that you have to go. But I definitely felt that in a tiny car by like week one, and how much everything changed in terms of how it felt. But yeah, also in terms of that scale of the landscape, the scale of the distances. You're not driving 60 miles to Dover anymore. You're driving 700 miles to the next.
Yeah, wow. That's incredible.
So from Russia, we went down into Kazakhstan, and then we decided to go to Uzbekistan. That wasn't on the plan, but we decided to go down there. We managed to get a visa after about 2 days. So we went down into Uzbekistan and then into Kyrgyzstan, then back into Kazakhstan. So generally the journey sort of split into Europe and Russia and then Central Asia and then back into Russia and then into Mongolia. That's what we ended up doing. And there's quite a shift there. That I felt was a bigger shift, I think. Partly the landscape changes. You know, I remember like the feeling in Russia of forests, like dark green, beautiful. And then you go, you know, Kazakhstan, I remember the deserts. And it's, you know, again, vast, but very different landscape. And language starts to change. It doesn't, lots of people speak Russian in that area, but other languages begin to change and religion changes and culture. So you do start to feel more, I would sense more of a difference there.
I feel like that's a part of the world that people don't really know at all. You know, were there any moments like in Kazakhstan where, you know, sometimes you just get those like brief moments, maybe it's a sunrise or maybe it's just suddenly like, wow, look where I am. This is incredibly beautiful.
Look at the world. Yeah.
Did you have any moments like that?
Yeah, loads of them. There's those like epic moments of like, oh my goodness, like look at this vastness in front of me and look at my little car, my tininess in this. There's those moments. And there's also ridiculous moments of like, we're stuck in a really big pothole and we can't get the car out. Things like that coming across. Really cool, like service stations that wouldn't be at all what you'd imagine if you hadn't traveled there. They're not selling crisps or whatever, but you can go in and get some fried eggs and they might have spare petrol in jerry cans that you can buy a bit of, that kind of thing. And some of those were brilliant. And I remember getting to a really remote village and stopping there. And I think the people were genuinely confused as to why, as you would be, why on earth we'd turned up in our little cars in the middle of like 3 days from anywhere and interrupting their perfectly peaceful life before that point. And they were extremely kind to us given how incredibly disorganized we were, and gave us some food and looked after us and really interested in our journey. And we couldn't, like in terms of language, we couldn't communicate at all. But I remember them just raiding the car as well, the kids just like taking stuff. Probably lost most of my spares there, but I didn't know what to do with them anyway. So
that's amazing. What were some of the, like you mentioned, getting stuck in a pothole, and what were some of the most difficult situations that you came across?
Lots of times you get pulled over by the police, especially then, because it wasn't normal. Like they didn't know what we were doing, and probably rightly were just like, what on earth, where are you going? Like no one ever drives here. What are you doing? And those are the times where I think I'd feel nervous. And quite often I would be the person that would go in with my very bad Russian or whatever, and that worked in Kazakhstan and Russia, to try and explain what we were doing. And often they'd be like, why? What is the point? What is the point? I remember one particular time that was scary was driving along Russia and a police car came and drove parallel to us on the road. And then the kind of nose of a barrel of a gun came through the window, the passenger window, and was like pointing at John's head. And I remember thinking, okay, I think this is, please, can you pull over? So we did that. And then we went through the light. And I was genuinely frightened. Like, that's, I'm like, goodness me, like, this person is cross and we're in the middle of nowhere and they've got a gun. And so we did our best explaining what on earth we were doing. And that whole interaction ended with us with a map on the bonnet and him using the gun to point out local sites that we should go and see and his favourite lake. And he was just like, brilliant, you're here. I hope you really enjoy the area. And it's that kind of interaction that I think you're only going to get if you adventure through the world like this. Like, to go from like, oh dear, I'm frightened, there's a gun being pointed at us through our car window, to that same gun being used to tell us where we should go and have a nice bathe or whatever. That is an experience you're not going to get in any other context.
Quick shout out for the adventurous guys. If you're curious listening to this and thinking, hell yeah, I want to drive a crap car to Mongolia, you can. They still run this trip and you can take part. You can also do something called the rickshaw run in India, which is, you guessed it, driving a rickshaw across India. They also do a shorter version of this, which they're launching next year. I'm trying to get on that one, so maybe I'll see you there. They do something called the monkey run as well, which is basically driving a clown-sized motorbike across preposterous, amazing countries like Peru and America, and lots of other utterly amazing pieces of chaos and fun. So if you want to check it out, head to theadventurous.com to find out more. If nothing else, the website is genuinely hilarious and worth checking out. Theadventurous.com.
Ah, and here we have travelers in their natural habitat enjoying guaranteed 4 p.m. checkout at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel, and they don't even see what's coming at them.
We're in. We got the table.
Yep, with Resi Priority Notify, they're alerted when hard-to-get reservations open up.
Reservation for two? Save the best for last.
Thanks to Amex Platinum, the last day vacation brings yet another experience. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This episode is brought to you by United Airlines. When you want to make the most of your vacation, book with United. They're an airline that cares about your travels as much as you do. United is transforming the flying experience with Bluetooth connectivity, screens, power at every seat, and bigger overhead bins to help fit everyone's bag. And with their app, you can skip the bag check line, get live updates, and more. Change the way you fly. Book your next trip today at united.com.
I love it. That's so funny. It's a great metaphor, that, as well, isn't it? For, you know, just in general, like traveling and people.
Yeah, and people. And he's a buzz and he's a human being, and actually loved the idea in the end and was really excited about it. But I don't think we ever met. We actually genuinely, you know, we never met real jeopardy. I think we got into a very slow, or one of the teams got into a very slow chase with some bandits somewhere in Kazakhstan.
Like, you're half remembering this.
And it was very slow. I remember none of the cars could go very fast. Their car couldn't go very fast and our car couldn't go very fast either. So things like that happened along the way. But that year, that 2004, we were immensely lucky. I guess it is luck that nothing bad really happened. We were able to get ourselves out of any situation. We were able to find food. We were able to communicate with people. But actually what you think is that hospitality is amazing. It should never be taken advantage of. I'm not saying go out into the world and just like expect other people to feed you or whatever at all. And that's not what we're encouraging either. And I hope we were very respectful in terms of the way that we interacted with people, but extremely grateful at the times that we needed it, that help was offered, especially if you had a breakdown or something and you just needed someone to help weld something or cut something out or to have a cup of tea because you're having a down day. There was a girl I remember in that village as well. I didn't learn her name, but I just remember thinking, gosh, we were a similar age. Because I was like 20, I don't remember, 23, 24. We couldn't talk to each other, but we could sort of perceive how incredibly different our lives were. And I don't, you know, obviously there's no, it's not like I've kept in touch. I don't even remember where that was, but I feel very grateful for the hospitality they showed us.
You remember that. And I'm sure she remembers that too. You know,
yeah,
it's like
yeah.
that moment.
Yeah,
of
exactly. Yeah.
Connection.
When some weird painted car turned up in the village.
That's great. Where did you stay, by the way? I just want to like get a couple of sort of like practical bits.
Yeah,
so you sleeping in the car?
Yeah, we slept in the car a lot. And we stayed in some hotels. Some of them were finished. Some of them weren't. Often we'd get to a place and if we really felt like we needed a bed for the night, just try and ask people where a place to sleep was. You'd end up in all sorts of different venues as a result. It was one huge, I remember being in Kazakhstan somewhere, this huge venue. I don't think it was really a hotel that was open, but they let us stay there. We, you know, let us book a room or whatever. And it was just a vast hall. And I think it was probably going to be used for weddings or something, but we slept, you know, off the side of this big hall. But you're so tired often by this yeah. point that you're really grateful for any lilo on the floor is going to do.
Yeah. How many hours are you driving a day, by the way? Like, it sounds like you're on a mission, but...
That varied.
Yeah.
That varied. And it depended sort of, again, because we weren't planning, because we had this kind of en route idea. We weren't thinking, oh, by this point, we'll hit that point. What we were doing was going, next, we need to get to this place.
Yep.
Right, let's do that.
Right, yeah.
We didn't know how long that would take or what would hit us on the way. So we weren't... You know, you'd get to a site, you'd been driving for 5 hours or whatever and get to a sign, it would say it's 700 kilometers to that place still. And you'd be like, it's going to be a long day.
Did Starsky and Hutch have any music?
Were you yeah, oh, with? Yeah. We had to have music. You have to have a playlist. I can't even remember what was in my Fiesta. I probably had a little tape cassette or
yeah.
CD player or something. I definitely didn't have any like aux in cables or anything like that. I love that about the rally. I love that if you sat in different people's cars, that they would be in a world created by their music.
Yeah.
They could feasibly be experiencing the same place completely differently because yeah, of the music that they've got
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
I really like that. And that's something I wanted to say about the journey, actually, in the en route, and something you asked about in terms of ethos. And part of what I was thinking is the way people choose that journey, that adventure, is so important. Like, that's their individual choice. You know, whether you turn left or right there, that's going to bring a potentially completely different experience of that bit of the world. And that's why I think it's important. We're not going to say whether you turn left or right, and we're not going to itinerize it for you. Not going to put you in a hotel, but you're going to find one that you found and you experienced and you made that decision about which way to go.
Yeah.
I think that's really important, I think.
So I did, he's a friend of mine, but he wrote this book called Where's Wallace? Because what he did was he decided to go to three places he'd never heard of, like these random kind of countries that no one's really heard of,
yeah.
and knowing nothing about them with no research or no plans or anything at all, quite similar in a way. But one of his take-homes was, when you don't know anything about a place, everything's a surprise and everything's amazing. Like, you haven't seen
yeah.
the
yeah.
picture of like this great mountain or whatever.
Yeah.
It just suddenly appears, you know? And maybe there's something in that surprise
yeah.
as well that,
yeah.
that really makes it.
Yeah. And I got it at a smaller scale than mountains, but just even like, wow, cool, look at this tea shop.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the middle of nowhere.
I love that.
Or, oh, this road isn't as tall as I expected. Look at the size of that pothole. Like, they were you know, there's smaller things.
Yeah.
Because there is the epic like landscape or whatever, but there's also the tiny things, which is, I think I got a lot out of those things.
That's
those
great.
Discoveries on an adventure.
I love that.
Or a petrol station where you're like, whoa, look, they also sell, like, you know, this person's selling socks. I've still got my socks that I bought.
Absolutely brilliant. So we started talked at the beginning a bit about the end. What was that like, that final couple of days or whatever?
It was that feeling. What is this feeling where you are, the anticipation of finishing is really exciting. And at the same time, you don't want it to be over. I don't know what that feeling is. I don't know, have a word for that. But I think that's how I felt. And I remember just looking at things a bit more carefully in Altai. So that's interesting as well, isn't it? Whereas before I was kind of quite forward and quite like, we've got, you know, what's the next place we're going to? When I got nearly to the end, I was like, hang on. I'm not going to be doing this for very much longer. So what actually am I in? What am I looking at? And so I think I remember Altai in a kind of different way, that's different tone for me, those last couple of days. So that we're in Russia at that point, Russian Altai, and we're going through really beautiful
one of the most beautiful places I think I've been, like just hills and step, and the light was amazing. And yeah, there was a kind of a slowness of my thoughts about it, I think, or slowing down of it. Like this is, we're coming to the end of something, take it in. Like we've made it, but also look at where you are.
Did the journey, like, you know, so many years on now, like did the journey change you? I feel like that kind of journey must sort of fundamentally change you in some ways.
I guess it must, mustn't it? Because you're so confronted with all these different experiences, foods, people, languages, landscapes, cultures that I hadn't traveled like that before. So it's definitely added to who I am. I don't know whether it's fundamentally changed me. I think that I hold on in a world where it's sometimes difficult to do that now, right? To the idea that as a human being on the planet, you can go out. We were able to go out into the world and do that. And that's what I hope people get from it, that like, wow, our planet is massive and amazing and diverse. And I'm lucky enough to have been able to see this huge slice of it on this journey. I think that, yeah, that's the thing that probably shifted in me, definitely. And I think it's what I hope people are doing now when they come on adventures, or what you would have on the rickshaw runner. You know, maybe it's a smaller version of it. Some people have a week to take. I think we have to now more than ever remind ourselves of who we are and what we're all doing here. And adventure has a part to play in that. And I mean real adventure, where we actually like shake the hand of someone we wouldn't otherwise see. And just remember, we all have our own things going on and our own stories. So yeah, I hope that's what people get out of our adventures for themselves. I hope they can take that home and go, gosh, that's a really lucky thing to have done, and for it to uplift them.
Well, it's a beautiful place. I could keep talking about this forever. This is I think you talk so beautifully about it, and it's really inspiring. But I think that's a beautiful place to end this conversation for now. So yeah. thank you, Jenny. That was amazing to have you on. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. It's been great to meet you.
Yeah, no worries. Well, come on more adventures, Aaron. That's what I was going to say.
Well,
gotta get you on a monkey bike now.
You say that. I don't know about a motorbike, but a rickshaw, perhaps. I've been chatting with Penny about it. So awesome. The South Indian rickshaw.
Do it. I don't know. Yeah. Get in a rickshaw. Yeah.
Purveyors of chaos fighting to make the world less boring. Absolutely love it. And I love the deeper ideas behind it too. So thank you, Jenny. And did you know that was her first ever interview? Crazy, isn't it? She seems like a seasoned old pro to me. So you got to get behind that mic again, Jenny. And if you're interested in finding out more about all these kind of crazy things they do, go to theadventurist.com. Highly recommend just checking it out. So that's about all we have time for today. Keep dreaming. Keep being insane in the way you dream too, because the more we look for wonder in the world, the more the wonder of the world becomes a part of who we are. Dare to be truly alive. This episode was produced by Armchair Productions. My name's Aaron Miller. I write and present the show. Charles Tyree does the audio editing and sound design, and Jason Patton is our lead producer. Our theme music is by the artist Sweet Chap. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time.
It's an election year, so you've likely been thinking, why does it feel like American democracy is unraveling? It's the fault of our electoral system and its winner-take-all ideology. But what if it didn't have to be that way? I'm Colin Cole, one of the hosts of The Future of Our Former Democracy, where we address the question, is this centuries-old electoral system really the best we have in 2024? We look to Northern Ireland and explore how they reformed their political system to overcome deep divides and ensure more equitable representation. Each episode takes a closer look at what the U.S. could learn from Ireland's journey and what it could look like if the United States dismantled this polarizing system and replaced it with a more proportional one. Each episode examines why Northern Ireland's history can act as a blueprint for how we can overcome political divisions and achieve fairer representation. We'll take you on a sound-rich journey filled with historical insights, personal narratives, and expert interviews to challenge the idea of democracy and explore bold solutions for a more equitable future. So follow The Future of Our Former Democracy wherever you get your podcasts.
What if you could poke, prod, and explore the mysteries of nature from wherever you are? I'm Nate Hedgie, host of Outside In. an award-winning podcast from New Hampshire Public Radio. We cover all kinds of topics related to our environment, with a healthy dose of goofing off, of course. Outside In isn't just a show for thru-hikers and conservationists. It's a podcast for anyone who's ready to embrace their curiosity about the natural world and have some fun doing it. Listen every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.